You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers and all the big news about their new coaching hire of Nate Bjorkgren. As always, my name is Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes in the West Indianapolis Community News. Join me on the other line to break down Bjorkgren's introductory press conference. My co-host, former Indy Cornrows writer extraordinaire Adam Friedman. Adam, what were your impressions just in general of the way he spoke and the way that Kevin Pritchard talked about new Pacers head coach Nate Bjorkgren?
He's a confident man.
He is a very confident man. It's hard not to be with his background, you know what I mean?
Well, I think it's actually hard not to be as an NBA head coach to get to that level.
That's also true.
At that level, you have to be pretty confident, but yeah.
It was very informative and good, and it actually got a lot more granular than I expected. You know, there was a lot of the generic new coach words that we expected and we even said would be talked about yesterday. But it did get a lot more granular, which was really cool. And we're going to run through some of the stuff that I thought stood out about. And again, it's an introductory press conference. It's not clear what exactly will and won't necessarily translate from what he says, but it's hard not to take it at face value, and we can use some of his past to confidently say what will and won't be the case. So we have some stuff that he said that we want to break down and how it will apply to the Pacers going forward. And number one comes from the very first question Kevin Bowen, ESPN 1070 The Fan, asked about Nate Bjorkgren's X's and O's philosophy. And I'm just going to throw the audio in from the presser right here. So hear from the coach himself.
Very disruptive, very aggressive in style. I think you look at our teams and as a fan and media and as a member of the Indiana Pacers organization, will be a fun team to watch. You're going to see a lot of movement on both sides of the ball. You're going to see weak side movement on the offensive end. You're going to see different players handling the ball and pushing it up the floor. We want to look for more possessions. We want to be attacking and utilize the free throw line on getting to the rim, utilize that three-point line and taking the shots that we want in our offense. Defensively, like I said, disruptive is, and Kevin mentioned this, we're not going to be crazy just to throw something out there, to throw it out there. All of our defense will have a purpose, and my philosophy in the defense is to change, and to change quite frequently. There are many times during a game that you can change, whether it be out of a timeout, quarter breaks, during free throws. So I think that is the disruptive part that I mentioned first.
So Adam, what did you think of his description of the way that he likes to get his teams to play?
It sounds like we're in for a sea change with the Pacers. I mean,
a big one.
I would say even going back to Vogel's days, the Pacers played a very consistent style. I mean, really under McMillan, not a lot changed. And actually, the way it changed was more of a regression, right? I think under Vogel the last year, they were moving towards more of a three-point shooting team and then kind of went back to the kind of way they were playing in the early 2010s. And it seems like now the whole thing is going to be a lot different. The most interesting part I think he said during this was the have a lot of different guards, a lot of different guys bring up the ball and holding the ball in their hands, basically, yep. Which is interesting because I think that's a hint for like maybe he puts the ball into Warren's hand, Sabonis's hand. Like he expects to sort of be able to run a system where there's going to be four or five ball handlers on four or five different plays. And that's interesting to me from the start. And then defensively, I mean, we've seen the same thing from the Pacers for the better part of now 25 years. So it's interesting to see what kind of new defensive philosophy he brings.
Yeah, so part of this answer is when I mentioned earlier, right, how it's important to look to his past to cut through what we can actually expect and what is coaching speak, because we've heard of Nate McMillan every year say, you know, we're going to run more and shoot more free throws and threes, and it never happens, right? Coaches are going to say that stuff, but I put the asterisk there because we can see what the Raptors did in the past and know, you know, like Kyle Lowry brings it up a lot, but like so does Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam, and, you know, they really do – have varied approaches to the way that team plays offense. And the thing that stood out there, and the Raptors are good at this, a lot of cutting away from the play. And that is not something McMillan typically had a lot of, right? They had their early action, which had some cutting and movement, but after that, not a ton of that. So it seems like maybe not quite a full 180, but it seems like we're going to see much more complicated style of basketball. What do you think? That's a good word for it.
Yeah, I think defensively you're going to see that. I mean, I think that was even part of Jay Michael's article either today or yesterday, which you guys should go read at IndyStar.com and subscribe if they can, was that they were, you know, the Raptors and the Pacers had trouble this all year where like a team would all of a sudden play zone or some kind of different, they had press or some kind of switch defense in the last, you know, 3 minutes of a game and thrown completely off. But the Pacers never really did that to other teams, right? They consistently played the same way over and over and over again, no matter really what was happening, right? There weren't a lot of like little wrinkles here or there. I think even, Bjorken has been the kind of defensive coach for the Raptors. So even their, So this is what Jay Michael was saying, and I agree, and it sounded that way, but he was credited with their, what is it called, box and one defense?
Yep, against the Warriors. Yep.
Right, and that's just a unique style. Now, certainly that's probably Nick Nurse and all the coaching staff there, but he played a part in that role. So, I mean, that's just kind of the kind of style he can bring, this random, like, really no, I mean, I didn't know what a box and one was until it just Steph Curry for four straight games and shut him down, pretty much. I mean, that's what he can bring in a way. So, I mean, that's what I think it's the fair thing to say is we're just going to see something totally different defensively and totally different, you know, mindset almost in a way.
Yeah, he's definitely seems like he's more creative, and something Pritchard mentioned earlier, you know, he did his opening statement and got asked a few questions as well. Something he mentioned earlier is that he likes about Bjorkgren is, well, two things I want to bring up here. One is that he said he's a risk taker and they're buying in on the risk taking, right? Sometimes it'll work, sometimes it won't. And KP even said we like that better. And this wasn't a shot at McMillan in the moment, but you know, I do immediately always think in those sayings, you know, oh, they weren't getting enough risk taking in their old coach. And that's true. McMillan was, you know, at the end of games, he ISO'd like crazy, and that's because they don't want to turn the ball over. That's not, there's no risk in that. And it sounds like, you know, now they're going the opposite direction where they'll take those risks, or they'll go with a super interesting rotation. Like Toronto was notorious for, and we'll talk about this later too, like just wonky lineups all the time or unique lineups all the time, right? So he's not afraid to be innovative and risky, and that is another big change from the way the Pacers played in the past.
Yeah, and I think the thing we have to remember too with this hiring is McMillan was, while he was a Pritchard guy in a way, he wasn't Pritchard's hire.
He was already with the org, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Pritchard was with I think was the GM by that time, so he was part of the hiring of McMillan, don't get me wrong. It's not like he like was just kind of a shotgun marriage. So, like, it wasn't like that. But McMillan wasn't like, you know, Pritchard really hadn't gone through, like, the full process of looking
around. I think Pritch brought him on as an assistant originally.
Yeah, but do you think Pritch made the hire in 2016? Because that's been a thought. I mean,
I don't know about that. But I'm just saying, like, Pritch was already in the Pacers org when they hired McMillan to be an assistant. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but
like,
sometimes
– who knows where that evolution
– coaches are better off being assistants than head coaches.
Absolutely.
Right, I mean, not to be an asshole to Nate McMillan, but like, you know, he clearly has a very good defensive philosophy and seems to kind of know how to do that in some way. But no, I mean, with this hire, I mean, it Pritchard, when he comes on, kind of went, you know, he had an air of kind of like confidence the same way Bjorken did, but he seemed like it was kind of like he had been looking around trying to find the quote unquote next, let's say Nick Nurse, Brad Stevens kind of coach, right. And he feels like this is the guy. Which is a good sign.
Yeah, I thought it was cool that Pritchard said, and this is kind of an intentional segue, kind of not. You know, they brought in these coaching candidates to their maybe not final interview, but some point in the interview process, they brought them in to talk about, you know, what X's and O's stuff they could do with the Pacers roster. And he said Bjorken just blew him away. Like, wow, oh my gosh, this is exactly, you know, this is unique, this is a style that would work for us. I think, you know, Pritchard, former college player, former coach himself, to take all that information in and go, okay, this is the right guy, I think says a lot, especially because he's seeing other coaches attempt the same exercise, right? So for someone to stand out in that exercise, I think is good as well.
Yeah, and that's – I mean, the thing is we'll never know – we won't know until we see it, right? Right. I mean, I think I've been asked.
We can only guess.
I've been asked by my family members. I'm sure you have too. If you talk to any of them, like, oh, what do you think the Pacers new coach? And I'm like, kind of no giving idea. A struggle. Like, we'll see. I mean, you don't really know until he actually coaches a game. I mean, you know, guys who can be great in the pressers can be terrible coaches, and the other way around is certainly possible as well. So you don't really know, but it makes you confident. And I don't mean to like throw it, but like the Pelicans, right? They go out and hire Stan Van Gundy. You know, he's getting from Stan Van Gundy.
Right.
I mean, he's a good coach-ish. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, he's Nick Millen level coach, right? You know, 10 to 15 best coach, and probably can, you know, has some experience and help, you know,
I think the hiring of Stan Van Gundy sucks because it means he's not on TV anymore. Because he was actually good at TV.
Yeah, he was good on TV. I mean, Stan Van Gundy, the thing with him is that...
he actually is a great hire for the Pelicans, though.
I mean, and a lot of this has to do with players, but with Van Gundy is the kind of guy who, if you give him good players, probably can succeed, but I'm not sure he can take a bad team to be good. Where the Pacers are looking for a guy that can do that, right? I mean, not that they have bad players right now, but looking for a guy who can exceed his talent level versus somebody who can, you know, take great players and make them great, right? I mean, that's kind of what Vogel's really good at, I would say, right? He kind of had really good teams and could get the most out of them, where...
Right,
Nash McMillan was that way, and they needed a coach who could do that. And they seem to think Bjorken. Well, I'm going to mess it up so much, Bjorken. if I said it wrong, I'll start calling Coach Nate. Is that guy? And it was interesting to, you know, to come out of the gate in that first question and just be like, "We're going to be aggressive. We're going to be fun." Kind of thing is kind of a tell. Right? I'm not sure many coaches would describe their style as fun, right? I mean,
a lot of them would say fundamental or something like that,
right? Like they would go like, yeah, exactly. Like I think McMillan probably would say we're going to do fundamentals, but that like he comes out and he kind of is trying to be like, we're going to play a style that like makes people excited. And I mean, that's good for players too, for players, right? Right. It's sort of, you know, players want to play for good coaches, but they also want to play coaches who can kind of make the game fun for them. I mean, you see that with the Warriors and when Steve Kerr went there, that mindset of that team went from being like Mark Jackson, which is like this like hunkered down, like everybody that's a world team, to like this fun, loving, everybody, you know, is going to love this team because we play so free, right? So, I mean, that's what you see from him right now, and that's the hope what he can bring, I guess.
So the reason I said this is a segue is because it seemed like what Kevin Pritchard said is he said, we brought in these coaches and said, how would you maximize our current roster? And I think that, you know, I don't know if he meant anything by it, but him saying our current roster, and Caitlin Cooper tweeted this as well, which really got me snowballing on this thought, is like, is he implying to these coaches, hey, we're keeping the team we have next year, right? So what can you do with it? And then later, Bjorken was asked about the Turbonis pairing, and we're going to talk about that because I think that is obviously a huge part of this press conference, one of the, if not the biggest topic for the Pacers coming into this offseason. So we're going to talk about new Nate's philosophies on the two centers. But first, I got to talk to you guys about Rock Auto, because with the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now possible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront for your car. Why endure intimidating questioning about your vehicle and wait while the counterman orders the parts when you can get them yourself at rockauto.com? They're a family business who've been serving auto parts customers online for 20-plus years. Go to rockauto.com right now to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything you'll need, and their catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. You can quickly see everything you'll need. Best of all, their prices always reliably low, and the same for everyone. Why spend up to twice as much at the same parts at a store when you can get them for cheaper at rockauto.com? When you're checking out, right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. So, of course, it came up. The big thing, and we talked about this, we tried to hold off a little bit, but we talked about this yesterday, is Sabonis and Turner with Bjorkgren, and I don't know if this is some of the appeal or not. It wasn't directly asked to Pritchard, but the Raptors occasionally used Ibaka and Gasol together, and that is Bob Kravitz of The Athletic, and he writes about every sport in Indy very well, asked about, okay, you've used these two bigs with Toronto before. What do you think of the Pacers' bigs and using them together? And new Nate basically had glowing reviews for the duo, and Adam immediately texted me during that answer during the press conference. So I'll let you take it away for a second.
Yeah, if I have one criticism of this press conference or this whole thing, it made me, when he said, I mean, we played at 40, when he gave those comments, I immediately thought, was he hired because he said he could make this work? And that made
That is possible, and I think that is an interesting thing to think about.
Because Mike D'Antoni has been the name for how long, right? And maybe it came into money. But I wonder if D'Antoni said, you got to trade one of those guys because I'm not going to play both. And like, and you know, maybe it's posturing. Maybe it's, you know, keep their value up as high. Right, because the minute you know you're going to trade somebody, their value tanks. That's just the way it works in the NBA. That's why even with Vic right now, you hear that, well, we're going to bring him back for a year because you don't want to give him any person. You're just going to trade him because his value will hit rock bottom at that point.
Well, hey, Vic apparently loves this guy and texted him right away. So that's good news.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying in general, right? You saw it with Paul George, right?
I didn't think we'd have an opportunity to talk about Oladipo texting the new coach right away. And so I wanted to fit it in after you said
it. Yeah. No, you're fine. So, I mean, the question is, I don't think I'm opposed to them trying to make it work if they're going to bring all five of their starters back, right? If they're going to bring everybody back and try to make it work, I'm not opposed to that thought. Maybe he has some philosophy where he can make it work. I'm hesitant. We've seen enough times. I'm not sure it's going to be like some rating success. It's going to be just kind of a little bit above average. But maybe he can make it work. And, you know, if not, they're still tradable next season. They both got 4 years. Turner's got three, and Sabonis has four on his deal, and none of two and three. So, like, it's not like they're untradeable in the next year. And then you'll know for sure. And, you know, I'm not necessarily opposed to it. I'm just worried that, like, they hired a coach trying to make this fit. And to me, that's worrisome because you don't want to back into a solution. You want to actually create the solution in the first
place. Yeah. So we've kind of maybe not directly ever said this, but, like, I think we're both of the mind that it's kind of justified to run it back with both, right? Again, they had a plus net rating with both on the court. They were going to be a 50-win team if they played all 82 games. 50-plus win team if they played all 82 games.
And Vic makes them better.
What's up?
And Vic makes them better, right? Adding him with them makes them better. I mean, yeah.
So, there's reasons to say, all right, this is good enough that maybe if they were both healthy in the playoffs, I mean, the Heat were amazing. Like, they probably wouldn't have won anyway. But – you know, in the right scenario where, yeah, even with both centers, we can get out of the first round and accomplish our goals. And it's justifiable to say that. The scenario of the Sabonis injury and a new coach and, like you said, the length of their contracts makes it justifiable. I think me and you both, though, lean that they should be moving on. Hence, we both put Turner at the top of our most likely to be traded this offseason think lists. But, yeah, it was interesting that got brought up in that way. Especially because, right, when he said, we said this in the positive light last segment of, yeah, he came in and looked at the current roster and said, here's how I can make it work. But now you get to it from the bad side of like, oh, they were literally Taylor making these questions to say, potentially, how do we make the two centers work? Now, what he actually said, just so we aren't beating around the bush and using our own words, here's what he actually said about Sabonis and Turner together.
Very comfortable. When you talk about those two bigs, they're just not any two bigs. I mean, they are very dynamic and they complement each other very well. From Domas being able to, he just puts so much pressure on the rim. I just know coaching against him in the past, his ability to screen and dive hard and how physical he is. And you talk about Miles Turner, who I had a great conversation with again yesterday, how versatile he can be on stretching the floor, protecting the rim on the defensive end. He's a big that you can use as a trigger man. So I feel very comfortable. And to your question, I love that because I compare those two very much to Serge and Mark. And you mentioned Pascal in there, but it is very, very comparable.
So one, I think it's cool that he already has talked to Turner and kind of telling, you know, like the day that happens, talking to Turner is cool. But, you know, I think he's right that they are dynamic and complementary players. And I think that that's the reason we've always said it can work, right? Nate never got the most out of him by, you know, not encouraging Miles to shoot as much as he should and potentially giving Sabonis the ball a little too much even. I mean, Sabonis is amazing and it should have the ball out, but it wasn't always perfect. And even if it's not the right solution for the Pacers long term, I do wonder if he can get more out of them, you know, in the context of the whole starting five and such.
Yeah. And the thing I wonder too is how much value does trading one of them really have? Like, in terms of what can you get back? Can you get back even a starting level player for one? And are you better off just running back the whole same roster and knowing at worst case, you can just try to go small with like a Lamb when he's healthy, Warren, Oladipo, Brogdon line up with one of them, most likely Sabonis, right? Like from what I understand from like what he said, the press conference in terms of like the style of the Raptors playing, whatnot, like if something isn't working there, he's not going to keep playing it just to play it. Right. So like, and especially that means in a playoff game, right. I think this year, if everybody had been healthy, they should have eventually gone small in the playoffs to try to counter Heat. And I'm not sure they would have done it quick enough to actually win. I'm more confident that somebody with a Nick Nurse mindset might just immediately see it doesn't work game one and switch it up. You know what I mean?
So see, I was going to talk about this last segment, but I'll just do it now because of what you just said. But like something else he mentioned is, you know, he's, and we kind of alluded to this already, he doesn't guarantee rotation spots or minutes, right? He kind of is willing, well, he says that at least. And the Raptors, again, were that team. They always mixed it up. They had different starting lineups, they had different bench units. They, you know, some guys did not play on given nights. And the team bought into that, you know, so something the coaching staff said to them made them okay with having varied playing time. And like the key guy still played every game, you know, it's not like Miles and Sabonis aren't going to play. It's just that, you know, I do wonder if he's like, oh, this is a game for Miles and he'll play Miles more than Sabonis or the flip side. I think that can be good. And I think that that level of rotational flexibility and something else he mentioned with it is come playoff time, then you're not throwing out a whole new lineup, like you just said, right? Where they're not throwing out something they've never done before that would never, you know, that's going to be rusty just by default. So I thought that was all interesting and needed in the context of these two bigs. But, you know, I'm just curious if I think this indicates a little less confidence for Mina that they will move on from them. But it should be interesting, especially because, you know, he already talked to Turner. So, I don't know. But sure seems like this made me feel like at least that they're going to roll in with both and I guess see what he can do with them.
So the question is, does Sabonis want out? And that's why Mark Turner. We haven't heard anything yet, but that's
I kind of doubt it. It seems like we heard in this press conference that Sabonis is in Europe right now, right? He's about to play for the Lithuanian national team.
Yeah, well, when the rumors over the summer, that was just one of the.
I don't know.
I think Ryan Russell put out one of his shows, and he's well. But to me, the biggest loser today might have been Goga, right? I mean, when is right? He's not going to crack the rotation next year. I mean, maybe a tiny bit, but it's not really going to be able
about
to play
the same 15 minutes a game at most. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if obviously there could be injuries and whatnot, but like, you know. And maybe, honestly, he might need another year. I mean, he came in super young. He was like one of the youngest players in the league when he came in, right? He was barely 19 years old. So maybe he needs another year to develop and whatnot. And especially with the weird pandemic year, he needed, you know, like a full year, I guess, is to say. But to me, it does kind of – it bodes – one, it's concerning to, like, if he's not going to play, what was the point of taking that draft pick in the first place when there were other guys maybe available at that range who could have some contribution, like Matthias Thybulle and whatnot. So – I don't know. I mean, obviously you can't keep harping on all the picks, but that's just, if Goga is sort of just going to be thrown away as like a nothing, like it just kind of looks bad in the long term for the Pritchard resume. When I don't think you can say he's good or bad or not, he hasn't played enough.
Yeah. Too early there. But yeah, the you know, we talked about that with the Goga pick that kind of started the clock of Sabonis. So
yeah,
we'll see. Nate Bjorkgren's got his work cut out for him with that duo, Bjorkgren. I'm just going to say it slow.
Bjorkgren.
You know what?
I'm terrible. If you say it fast enough, then you can't say it wrong because it just sounds like one.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. So that was the most interesting part to me because it was the most applicable directly to the current roster. I asked a question about TJ Warren. We're not going to really talk about it, but just about his evolution since new Nate was his coach with Phoenix. And there were questions about Oladipo, but mostly just the interactions they've had. It wasn't really X's and O's, but with those two bigs, he really got into more formal discussion about the team and the plans going forward. So I think it was worth talking about and very interesting. And I think that's probably the storyline of the team next year. So on the court, off the court, it's obviously going to be deep all season, but we'll have to see. We have one more general thing to talk about, maybe get a little more into that rotation thing and talk about something he was able to do with the Raptors last year. But first, it's Locked On Pacers, which means I'm going to tell you guys to try Built Bar because Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. It is a 100% covered in chocolate protein bar that is perfect for the health conscious guy and a great way to maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. What Built Bar is they're a low calorie, low sugar, yet high protein and high fiber protein bar. With 18 amazing flavors. We got to try the original 12. I really liked almost all of them. They're soft and easy to chew. Their texture kind of matches the flavor. They're just really good, and I highly recommend trying them. For example, the peanut butter flavor one, 19 grams of protein, but only 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and 5 carbs. So go check them out. Hit up builtbar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word. When you check out, you'll get 20% off your next order. That's builtbar.com with a promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, for 20% off at builtbar.com. So Chris Denary, all the credit to Chris Denary for this. I had a list of questions to ask, and I was two away, Chris Denary then me. And I was going to ask about, hey, you made the Raptors were really good this past season. They were the 2 seed. They were going to win more regular season games the year before when they won the title. And that's so impressive to me. And I think that is something that to copy from another team. And Pritchard mentioned early in the press conference, championship DNA being on his list of coaching qualities, right? We didn't really hear about that in the postseason presser, but we heard it today. So I think that is an appeal for Bjorkgren. But I wanted to ask about the Raptors, you know, how they were able to just be so good the year after, not because, you know, they have championship hangover or anything, but because they lost Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, right? Their roster completely transformed from this stud team to a lesser team, and they were even better and really good. And Chris Cenari, again, right before me asked it, so I had to kind of pivot, but credit to Chris Cenari, it's a great question. But here's what he had to say about that transition from year to year.
Yeah, it's a good question. It wasn't defending the title. It was, we used the phrase attacking the title. And I do believe that. I believe we were in attack mode all of this past season. Our guys, they were ready. They were ready for more changes, meaning more defenses, more detailed things we can do on offense. They were hungry. And that's what you're going to find with this Indiana Pacer team. There's going to be things that you'll see. It starts simple, but I want you to, as fans, I want you to be able to watch it grow during the course of the season. And you're going to see new things developing and happening. And then pretty soon the players will start taking it to the next level. We'll give them a plan. We'll give them our schemes, but they'll take it a notch up. And then it's a lot of fun to watch. And then come playoff time, we've been through every possible scenario that you could go through. And now it's time to do it again and to do it better.
So it's kind of hard to take the attack the championship sort of phraseology and things like that and apply it to the Pacers, I think, Adam, because obviously the Pacers haven't won a first-round series in a while. But, you know, I think that it's interesting that the Raptors, even in this kind of – this is how I want to get to this. The Raptors were able to adapt to a big roster change very quickly on the fly and keep their guys all in the right mindset and on the same page and put them in a position to succeed and still be just as good, if not better, the following season.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that's through player development, right? I mean, the yep. improvement of Siakam and Fred VanVleet really helps replace the two guys that kind of were slacking, right? They were missing a top shooting guard and a top small forward. So
that's what
that helped. That helped. But I mean, to me, it's to be able to not have a change of hangover, especially when you are not expected to do anything, it takes a lot of motivation and push from a coach and yep. a coaching staff to keep you kind of hungry, if that makes sense.
Right. And see, that's the stuff we can't really know until the season starts, right? We won't know how players respond to the things he's saying, or maybe the varied rotation doesn't sit well with some guys. Who knows with all that? It's all impossible to say on October 21st when the season won't start till January. But that is at least encouraging to me from a like, if we're thinking about how this guy could command players or get guys to play together and things like that. Now, who knows how much Nurse is behind that or other Raptors assistants, but I really enjoyed that answer. And I want to follow up what you said, because that was my follow-up question. Now, okay, well, kind of how are you getting the players to be so good? And some of it's a little both that they get Terrence Davis from undrafted free agency and he's really good for them. Or they pick up a lot of those guys. But, you know, as we saw in the playoffs this year, they're one game from the conference finals again because, you know, OG is suddenly much better in the playoffs. And Siakam, again, was all NBA level this year. And Norm Powell is suddenly a huge contributor in that rotation. And Fred VanVleet, you know, he was awesome in the playoffs last year, but really carried that over and it was even better this year, right? All that development, and the Pacers have been good at getting the stuff out of vets, but like seeing it out of the younger, I guess Siakam's kind of older, but like
the OG, mean third or fourth year. I mean, that's young.
Yeah, yeah. Young in the league. Siakam's and the OGs and the Terrence Davises, to see those guys improve, to me, I think that's something that the Pacers never have really had, is that it's not, that's never is way, way too extreme, but it recently have not had is those young guys who really carve out their role perfectly and really are able to step up and perform. And I think that is a big part of why the Raptors are so successful and something I think that would be huge for the Pacers to copy.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is they don't, I mean, I guess they have Aaron Holiday, right? But how many, I guess
Sumner,
but
a little bit,
but to me, it's gotta be the continued development of like maybe the mid career guys, right? Like, I mean, Turner's only in sixth season, Thompson is fifth.
Right.
Warren is fifth season, right? I think fifth or sixth. I mean, he's not, and they're all, you know, under 27, you know, even under 25. I mean, the question is, can you keep developing those guys? Because I do think especially I'm a point to Warren Sabonis have definitely room to grow. I mean, they've definitely showed like flashes, yeah, but they have room to get even better. And that's, can he help kind of guide them along that way? Because that's going to be key for this team if they have to make a change in another spot, and because the guy wants out or guy in franchise, is having those two guys kind of develop into, you know, all-star caliber type players. And Sabonis was this year, and Warren was borderline, right? I don't know what – we'll see when they do the top 100 NBA, ranking for the NBA players, but he'll get in the – you think he's the top – you know, when they rank top 100 players, top 70, top 80 this year?
Our favorite thing that people write in the offseason, because we can use that on our show.
Yeah, what do you think Warren is? He didn't crack it this year, I don't think.
He was really close. I think I think one outlet had him in the high 90s, and then another one – like had him like mentions. In their honorable mentions, right? So he was close, and he'll for sure be in it next year.
He's probably top 70 or 80 now, right?
I was gonna say higher than that. I was gonna say 60s.
See, I don't know. I don't want to have recency bias of the whole bubble.
I don't want to have recency bias, but what I will say is I think that a lot of the reason he wasn't in the top 100 last year is because he couldn't defend for shit before.
Yeah, he hadn't done with a good team either, and he did
right,
both those
right.
things.
So I think maybe that, but you're right that there will be a lot of, hey, it was 8 games. Like,
but I mean that's an improvement, right? Like Sabonis was probably, I think he was 70 on the list, and maybe
he'll be 30-ish, 35.
Yeah, mid 30s or high 40s. I mean, you see that's the jump, right? Those guys keep improving, and so the goal is to keep, you know, next time Sabonis is in the top 25 and Warren's in the top 40, because if you can't have a superstar, the next best thing is to have, you know, 3 or 4 guys in the top 50, because that makes you just as competitive. I mean, you need more things to break your way, and you need a guy who can be clutch. But, like, you know, having 4 or 5 guys in that kind of range is just as good as having, you know, the best player at times, because the depth can be better, especially in a regular season game to like, kind of like conference finals level, at least.
Yeah. And speaking of Warren, we got to hear Bjorken talk about coaching TJ Warren in the past with Bakersfield Jam as an assistant. With the Phoenix Suns himself, I thought that was really interesting, right? He even joked that when Warren would get assigned to him when he was with the Jam, he said, I think in his first assignment game, he had like 45 points on 10 of 15 shooting or something crazy. So he's had that and has seen him get better, and I'm sure has already thought of ways he can get him to be the best version of TJ Warren he can be. But
yeah, 3-point shooting, Warren.
More three. Yeah, that three he had in the bubble was legit, and he worked on that apparently the entire quarantine. Get him.
I'm also wondering if McMillan didn't want him to shoot it, but when they went small, he kind of just had to shoot it.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a thought.
It's so weird to me with McMillan, because it's like he never discouraged threes, but the way he like let guys do stuff and ran sets, it kind of just by default, right? Like look for keep searching for the most open shot, not the first open shot, kind of just in general is going to lead to longer possessions and more mid-rangers.
I hope if a player takes a 2-point shot, he pulls it from the game, unless it's like a, you know, situational.
Wow.
Like, not
Warren is definitely allowed to take 20 footers.
Who? Well, Warren. Yeah, but I mean, like, I'm sick of seeing Miles Turner shoot that shot.
Yeah, off the pop. If you take it off the dribble, that's fine. It's probably an end of shot clock kind of thing. But, like, yeah, if you're popping at 20 feet, stop it. And I think all the data studies about analytics and how it's really impacting shot profiles is not really that, like, the mid-range shot is gone. It's that the assisted mid-range shot is gone, right? The setting up a guy for a 15-footer, it's like, why waste your time?
Yeah.
You know, the CJ McCollums in the regular season and your Chris Pauls and stuff show – yeah, if you can create it for yourself, go take the mid-ranger, right? If you can hit it, keep doing it. But no one's going to run a play for that. And yet the Pacers with Miles would have him pop to 20 feet all the time. It was so frustrating. So I
don't know if they would attention. I think he would just end up in that spot.
Yeah, sometimes. That's true. Coaches got to drill that into him too. So
yeah. So I'm excited to see. I mean, I'm hesitant to see how having centers can be modern. But if he can make it work, I mean, that's the kind of thing where if they can make, you know, become just this overpowering rebound team and have two guys, you know what I mean? I kind of think it becomes lethal. I mean, it could be something that sort of changes the setup, because then they can, I mean, if they go with the current lineup, the shortest kind of lineup is Vic at 6'4", right? Talking about a 6'6 Brogdon, talking about a 6'8 TJ Warren, 6'7 TJ Warren, you know, 6'11, 6'11 Turner and Sabonis. So, I mean, that's certainly a harder team to guard. And we saw with the Heat, having size is huge.
Yep. I 100% agree. I really think he did a good first impression in general. Outside of the very granular Sabonis stuff, I think everything thrown his way and everything he thought. I mean, this is how this press conference is going to go. right? That they don't have this press conference. You can come out and go, I don't know about this guy. You know what I mean? Like
his verbiage seemed young. That makes sense. Maybe that's wrong.
I think
he seemed excited.
It was refreshing. You know what I mean? And like, I never really had a problem with him saying like we didn't execute after every game because I think he just thought his game plan was really good, whatever. But like, I don't have I think that that verbiage is gone from the Pacers' book.
Players want some honesty or want somebody who can like, I don't know, like kind of straight talk them in a way that I'm not sure McMillan could. I don't know if that makes sense. Or like kind of be more in their lives, I guess.
Yeah.
Kind of relate to them more.
Not as involved with their personal lives. That is true.
Yeah, but I mean, somebody who can relate to them more, right? McMillan just wasn't going to relate to these players because he played in the league 30 years ago. He has some great wisdom and there's a ton of value in the knowledge, but he played in a kind of totally different era of basketball. I mean, the 1990 from the Jordan doc, we watched totally different basketball than we today. The money's different. I mean, everything. It's just not the same.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens. And the next step, and this was discussed a tiny bit in this presser, is hiring assistants and building a staff. Sounds like that's being put together, you know, today and tomorrow and now. So we'll have to see who that is again. I think we'll hear one of the assistants involved in the process, potentially his name again. But I don't know about any of the rest. We'll have to see. I'm intrigued by all that.
Yeah, we should mention that the Pacers were the first domino to fall. Pelicans hired the coach today.
Yeah, Pelicans, well, not Chris Finch, too, their own assistant, right? Even with him not being hired by the Pacers, they still went with Stan Van.
So what's left now? Just the Rockets, right?
The Rockets and the Thunder are still.
Thunder, that's right. I've got Thunder. So, yeah, they're the first domino.
The Thunder search is just slow and slow. Yeah, they get no all the time.
What, does somebody want that job? I don't know.
Look, this is not Pacers related. This is my final thought for today's show, though.
Okay.
I am dying for the Rockets to hire Jeff Van Gundy because I want Pelicans Rockets four times a year to be Van Gundy versus Van Gundy.
And just to see him on the sidelines, they're so similar looking.
I know. It would be awesome. It would be like must-see TV. Even if the teams are both like if James Harden and Zion are hurt, I don't care. I'm watching Van Gundy.
Then they could just snipe at each other in the press conference.
Yeah, it would be awesome. It would be awesome. That's so not related, but I think that would be fantastic.
That would be funny. It would be funny for sure.
But yeah, you know what? The press conference did the intended point for fans, I think, of making the team optimistic on the guy. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do with the team and move us into Nate 2 era. We need to make a catchier name for that, but we'll figure it out.
I'm going to get his name down. I'm going to say it's so butchered or so like slurred that it won't matter.
No, I want him to say it. I wish he said it so I could
We just think it's Bjorken.
Bjorken? Bjorken.
Yeah, Bjorken. Yeah.
Well, this is not good podcast. This is going to be like Elise Johnson for like a week.
Should wrap up, man.
Yeah. I got nothing else for today, but I will say two things. One, Sean Woodley, Locked On Raptors host, will be on tomorrow. Adam does not know that. I just am now telling you.
I actually didn't know that.
Okay. Oh, okay. So he will help break down what new Nate brought to Toronto for those 2 years there and his relationship with Nurse, things like that that are going to be important to copy and paste over to the Pacers. And then hopefully either next Monday or Tuesday will be our next show after that. We can break down whatever new news comes out of Pacers land over the weekend, right? I'm sure there'll be more info on the hire and some of the assistants and stuff like that. So stay tuned and all that stuff.
Yeah, and then we start breaking down kind of how he might fit or whatnot. So
even more,
but player by player even.
Yep, looking forward to that. So thank you guys so much for listening today. And finally, as we trotted through player season recaps and free agency look ahead, we're able to break down the Pacers coaching hire and what it means to the team. So a lot of content for that coming in the coming episodes. But thank you guys for listening today, and we will see you very soon.